episode 298.
Here's the one thing, Carm, that I would go back and change if I could. If I say, there's a one thing that I would change, is that I worked a ton of hours in that shop. You know, and I was fixing cars, I was writing service, and yeah, I'd wash cars if I needed to, just whatever it took, is that I didn't do a good job of protecting what I'll say the dinner table and making sure I was home for dinner, because that's where family happens.
Welcome, aftermarketers, to Remarkable Results Radio. Listen to learn just one thing from today's episode on your journey to remarkable results. Welcome, aftermarketers throughout North America and around the world. Carm Capriotto here with an interview with Mark Roberts, shop owner and serial entrepreneur. Hey, I want to thank Federal Mogul Motor Parts and Garage Gurus for their support of the podcast. You know, they are the reason you enjoy the podcast content library. So remember, for serious technical training and support online, on site, and on demand, Garage Gurus is everything you need to know. Find out more, fmgarageguru.com. Hey, you know, our beloved industry is made up of some of the best people in the world, and my job is to get their story told so you learn just one thing that will inspire you in ways that make you, your family, and your team better. Now, please tell a friend. Based on the emails I get, they'll thank you for a long, long time. The network of connected listeners builds every week, and I'm honored to have new Facebook friends, Brian Garvey, Colonia Auto Repair, George Alonzo, William Hamilton, and Bill Ballin. And my latest LinkedIn connections, Judy at Ryan's Service Center, Mark Shantz, and Scott Shotton. Welcome, welcome. Hey, for every social connection, find them at remarkableresults.biz/social. And for a list of this episode's talking points, additional bio information on Mark Roberts and the shop profile, see show notes at remarkableresults.biz/E298. Now meet Mark Roberts. Mark and I met at the Auto Vitals Digital Conference in Santa Barbara in January 2018. Now, I had plans to interview Mark before I got there, but ironically, we stayed at the same Airbnb house during our stay. I got to Uber to the conference and go to dinner with him. Mark Roberts is a serial entrepreneur, and we talk about it. He owns Schertz Auto Service in Schertz, Texas, and he's got an interesting way he runs the company. See, he just doesn't show up. In fact, his team doesn't even want him there, and he tells you the story. How did he become a serial entrepreneur? Well, as Mark tells it, he liked money, and he started looking to make money at the ripe old age of 15. He was an enterprising young man that looked for work opportunities everywhere. He loved computer software, and he worked to support, back in the day, IBM mainframes. It's also interesting how he became a shop owner. It's a great part of the story. I'll give you a hint. Mark shares a very powerful story about the value of family. He practices work-life balance, has a succession plan in place, is working on his second location, and he shares his technician's pay plan, loves to invest in the community, and discussed his implementation and the value of his digital vehicle inspection program. As has been the legacy of the podcast and the 297 episodes that have come before this one, your learning curve has never sounded so good. Now, meet Mark Roberts. A warm welcome to Mark Roberts from Schertz Auto Service in Schertz, Texas. Hey, hi.
Oh, good morning.
Good morning.
I'm glad to be here. And you pronounced our city name correctly?
Oh, wow. And especially with the wine we drank last night.
Yeah.
I can't even imagine. So I really want to set this up for our listener. I'm at the Auto Vitals. Mark and I are at the Auto Vitals Digital Conference here in Santa Barbara. And we're staying in a house, and he's a housemate of mine with some others. And we just...
Not a roommate, a housemate.
Not a roommate. Yeah, let's make that very clear. So we're hanging out, we're talking. I think we were at the kitchen table that night. And what Mark doesn't tell me is that he's a huge, huge fan of the show. So I started to tell him what I do, and I mentioned it. He goes, "I listen to that." And then I'd say something. "I listened to that. That was really good. Oh, and what you did last week." And so here it is. I have an opportunity to interview a heck of a guy who's really almost like a serial entrepreneur. And, you know, basically, didn't I ask you the other day, when do you find time to go into the shop?
Well, and my response was, I don't.
Right.
Is I go by the shop, and I obviously will remote in and look at what's going on and on a daily basis. And so I do find time to go by there. Usually they don't want me there. So that's,
you know what?
That's actually
a good sign. And you actually have a succession plan in place. I mean, there's a million things I want to talk about with you, but it started long, long time ago with you and software. And I don't want to delve too far back in history because I really want to talk about today and now and why you're here. But you were a software guy, a data guy.
Well, it was just I became fascinated by it, and I really just kind of know enough to be dangerous. And what I did back then, you know, probably isn't relevant to today. But I was just fascinated by it because I wrote some software very crude. I mean, when I look back, I still have it. I look at it, I'm like, wow, that's so crude. I wonder why I wrote that like that. But I didn't know anything. But what was fascinating about it is I love working with my hands. I love just tinkering and playing with stuff. And I'm like, gosh, I can do this software and I can tweak it and make this thing faster. It's just kind of like a car, except I never got my hands dirty. You know, so I was just fascinated by it.
And somehow you said you're going to become a mobile airbag tech. Was that now before or after the collision?
That was after I went to work for a shop as a collision tech and had no experience, but I was really a IBM mainframe guy is what I was working on.
Right. Oh, that's the story. An IBM mainframe. Anyone know what that is? See, they're at the bottom of the ocean anchoring.
Yeah, that's exactly it. And so while I was doing that work, I was a tech, and I was on call 24/7, 2-hour response time to a very large vendor in the automotive business. And the free time I had, I was just with a guy that was starting a body shop. And, you know, it was just fun to go hobby, just, oh, you know, I bet I can do that. Never really done body work.
So did you learn to paint?
You know, I will say I'm not a painter. I can go spray a car. You know, a painter is somebody that can match color and just really, you know, look at flop and look at all these different aspects of the paint. So I would tell people, no, I'm not a painter. Could I spray a car? Oh, yeah. I've sprayed stuff before, but I would never I wouldn't want to downplay what a really good painter does.
10 or 12 years with the collision shop, I think?
I worked for 10 years in the collision shop, and then I started the company. It was really what I really morphed into as I got involved with a franchise airbag service, and did that for 3 years, had a number of techs working for, this was back in, you know, I'm going to date myself a little bit. It goes back to the mid-90s when all this stuff, this technology was coming about. And
you were going to actually collision shops.
Collision shops,
okay.
Was the primary
customer.
You were doing
their airbag work.
Doing the airbag work and documenting processes and procedures and doing training for insurance carriers and stuff about how to estimate these systems properly. You know, and it was really little things, Carm, about, you know, we're going to go and, you know, there's a deployment issue and we're going to put a passenger bag in it, but you got to take the dash out to put the bag in. Well, we knew that, hey, anytime you have a deployment, there's this little vacuum line or this wiring harness that you're going to have to replace. That's not in the
SOP.
Yeah, it's not in a SOP. It's not a manufacturer. It doesn't say, hey, this is something you have to replace. It's just one of those things. Well, you know, if you don't know those systems, then you'll go in there and you'll take it out. And then it's like, oh, crap. We need to order this thing. Well, no dealer was going to have that on the shelf. So now you've got the dash out of this cart sitting. Well, that's really what we prided ourselves on is that, hey, we're not going to stop the wheels of production from turning. We're going to come into your shop. We are going to work while the wheels are still turning. So it wasn't, that was the, what we had to offer. It's not, hey, you're going to get the car done and then you're going to take it, you're going to have to take it to the dealership for them to do it. And then it's going to sit at the dealership for a week or whatever till they get to it. Well, our deal was we're going to come in there and we're going to do it while you're working on the car.
Are there still services today like that?
Yeah, actually the franchise is still around. They don't have a ton of locations in it. But the company that I actually started is still around. And what's really interesting is the guys I hired over 20 years ago still work for that company today.
And so you just said, hey, I want to start my own business. And then I believe it was Collision.
I was in Collision. I wanted to go build a collision shop. And I was taking classes at night Writing business plans and just really understanding financials.
Smart. Yeah. Wow.
And I would go to classes on the weekend, how to use a spreadsheet, or I had I bought a subscription to, it was called New Horizons Training Centers. And I would buy a subscription for, I think it was $1,000, but I could go take as many classes as I wanted on all different kinds of software. You know, I wanted to learn how to use Microsoft Word better because I didn't go to college route, went to kind of a trade school. And I wanted to learn how to use a spreadsheet better. And I wanted to learn how to use a database and how to manipulate data. And so I would just take classes at night. Sometimes I'd take them two or three nights a week.
Did that tenacity to want to learn prepare you to be this serial entrepreneur that you are?
Oh, yeah. Yeah, yeah. Most definitely. I can think back to my childhood. I mean, I was working when I was this is what's really scary. When I was 14 years old and 15 years old, back in the 70s, late 70s, I was installing CB radios in people's cars and
yes.
tuning antennas. And here I am. And, you know, to think about it today, would I let some 14-year-old get in my car and start drilling holes and mounting stuff in there, running cables? No, but that's what I was doing.
I don't know. Today, I don't know. They know a whole lot more about tech than we do.
Yeah. So it was, you know, it was always, you know, I had a paper route when I was a kid and always wanted to do something. So I'd install CB radios during the day. And at night, I'd walk over to this Mexican restaurant and I would wash dishes at night just because I always wanted to have money. And I think about it when I was, you know, back then, is they always paid me in ones. So I felt like I was a very rich man all the time.
You had a
but
lot
I was making,
of ones,
I was yeah. making, I was making probably $60-$65 a day back in the late 70s as a 15-year-old installing CB radios.
That's like $500 today.
Yeah. And so they sometimes they actually owned one of the partners owned a pawn shop next door, and sometimes they would say, "Why don't you just go next door and see if there's something you like?" And I would go next door and hey, you know, yeah, I want one of those stereo. Ooh, those are big speakers. Yeah, I want some of those.
Oh wow!
And so I did
so
that.
Funny.
I'm talking to Bud Houston, a technical product specialist with Federal Mogul Motor Parts. Do you actually put products in the hands of the technicians?
Yes, absolutely. Anytime there's new product introduced, perhaps a new problem solver or a new technology, we keep that stuff on the van just because their local parts supplier may not have it available. And we think it's important to show them what's coming. And then seeing the part is really, especially with the new OEX, seeing the part and touching the part is something that changes perspective rather than just a piece of paper with a picture of the part.
Okay, so you put an OEX pad into the hand of a technician, and you've done this, I'm sure, hundreds of times. What do you see on their face when they see it?
You can tell they get it. You know, in our industry, there's technology that we use all the time that you look at, and you're like, that just doesn't make sense to me. I'm going to take your word that it works. You put an OEX brake pad in somebody's hand, and I just ask the question, why does this look so weird? And they're like, I bet it's to make it cool. They get it as soon as you put it in their hand.
So technicians holding your product and listening to your presentation, do you ever see the light bulbs go up? They raise their hand and says, boy, I've got a great idea for you.
Oh, yeah, absolutely. Not only does that happen every time I'm with a group of guys, I solicit ideas. I'm like, listen, a lot of the stuff that I've shared with you originated in a bay somewhere where the technician said, you know what, if you could do this, it would be really cool. And so the stuff that I get, I send up, you know, to our engineering team and say, hey, could we do something like this? And there's things in the works, and there's some things that came out recently that originated in, hey, if you could do this, it would be helpful. Because at the end of the day, you know, I think Federal Mogul is known in every line to be a problem solver and not just solving a problem, but making an installation easier as well.
Federal Mogul Motor Parts' Garage Gurus is your go-to source for the vehicle training, technology, and answers you need to keep your next job on track. On site, online, or on demand, the gurus are here to help keep your business and your career on the road to success. Visit fmgarageguru.com.
So serial entrepreneur, so you went collision shop, then you added automotive.
When I sold my airbag service business, I said, in my mind, I had wrote some software to run the business, and I really, really enjoyed it and developed a system. So I'm going to go to school. I'm going to go back to school. I'm not going to go work for 2 years. I'm just going to sit and I'm not going to do anything. I'm going to go back to school because I kind of really like this coding. And that was in the late 90s. That was when the stock market was really good.
Oh, right.
And I sat home and day traded at an office in my house.
You day traded.
I loved it.
And you earned enough to keep you away.
Oh, yeah. I did. And then, but I had a, there was a consolidator at the time looking to grow. And they approached me about coming to work for them. And I kept telling them.
To be a data guy, right?
Not to look at some special projects that they wanted
special
to work on.
Special projects.
That's not just saying it was special projects.
Code
and
name.
So I just said, you know what? I'm going to, I don't want to come to work. I'm not interested in going to work. I kind of like what I'm doing now. And they kept coming back. And finally, I just threw a number out there. Well, if you want me to come to work, this is what it's going to take. And they didn't hesitate.
And you told me the number in private. You know, we were drinking some wine.
I said,
the other night,
"Oh crap!"
That was a pretty big damn number. Yeah, that's what happened.
I said, "Crap!" Now
when
I got to go
meet
work.
Your deal. Of course,
yeah. But once I went to work for them, in my mind, I felt like, you know, I'm going to do this for 2 years. I'm going to really look at, because I had access to all the financials of many locations and sizes of shops and stuff, and I'm going to look at that. And you know, I was traveling a lot, and my children were very young, and I just felt like, you know, I really want to be present as a dad. I don't want to be an absentee father. And, you know, I think I'm just going to go build me a small shop and just create a business. And it was a collision shop, and just do this business in the community I live and grew up in. And I don't need to make a ton of money. I need to make a living, but I just need to provide a great service because it's just something that's needed. And so that's what I did. And, you know, I just look back and think, man, I am so grateful that I never missed anything my kids did. If they had a program at school, I was there. It was difficult for me to leave at times because it was my business, and you know, but I had to keep telling myself, Mark, that's why you got into this business. That's why you got into this business, because you want to be present for your kids. That, you know what? I just said, you know, I'm not a doctor. Nobody is going to die on the operating table if I have to get up and go leave. We may have a slight delay in a car, but we can take care of that. And so I was able to do that. I was able to take off. And once I started doing that, I just felt like, gosh, I'm so grateful I get to do this. I'm so grateful that I've got people there that can still do the work and I'm not there. Yeah, it's probably not, you know, some things probably aren't happening like I would like them to happen because I'm not there.
That's, you're talking today. But
even
but,
back then.
Even back then. Okay.
Even
so,
back then.
So back then, were you putting in like 15-hour days?
Oh, yeah.
But
yes.
you were still home. You still saw the kids.
Oh, still. My house was a mile. My house was a mile from the shop. My parents lived a quarter of a mile from the shop. Everything my kids did was within, you know, really a mile of that shop. Here's the one thing, Carm, that I would go back and change if I could. If I say, there's a one thing that I would change, is that I worked a ton of hours in that shop. You know, and I was fixing cars, I was writing service, and yeah, I'd wash cars if I needed to, just whatever it took. Is that I didn't do a good job of protecting what I'll say the dinner table and making sure I was home for dinner, because that's where family happens. And so I would work late, you know, and then I'd come home, and then, of course, my kids are ready to go to bed and stuff. And I said, you know, I could have done a better job. I could have protected the dinner table. I could have went home and had dinner and done stuff and then went back to work when the kids went to bed. It was close enough that I could do that. You know, that's the only thing I say I would change. But I will say this, is that I never missed anything they did. And really, when I started looking at statistics and studies about how much time people actually spend doing family at the dinner table, it was I don't remember what the exact number was, but it was like 12 minutes of really family time and dinner. And so it's like, okay, well, you know, that was just one thing. But let me tell you, I am very close to my children, and it's been, I know we talked about this a little bit. It's been difficult because my son, who's 22, just graduated from college. He's my hunting buddy. He's my fishing buddy. He's my running around buddy, you know, and he's moving for a new job. and he moved. And so he graduated from college, which, yeah, I want him off my payroll, okay? And so, but let me tell you, it was just all through the holidays, I was just kind of bummed because I'm like, I'm so proud that he's, you know, he's going and he's start. It's a new season in his life. He's not that far away. He obviously, I can pretty much guarantee you, come summertime, he will probably be back home every other weekend because the guy he's working for is a very good friend of mine, and we have lake houses that are close to each other. Works. So right. They're there every weekend, and those kids love to be on the water and, you know, love boating and being out there. So he'll be there with probably some new friends.
I love it. I really have to remind everyone to take a mental note of this. If not, write it down in your to-do list or your goals list. Protecting the dinner table. You know, I've lived through exactly what you talked about, and it's really rough. Thank God for Mom and my wife, Ann, and I'm sure your wife, for doing the things that she did to raise the family when you weren't there. But at all costs, I guess, if you are, you know, and many of the people that listen to the show, they're localized. They're not out in a big corporate job, but they're also struggling with work-life balance and really trying to build their empire and figuring out how to get to the next level, the next plateau. Great thing to remember.
There's, you know, this whole work-life balance, I don't believe there's ever a balance. Balance is this temporary time that you swing through when you're going from one extreme to the next. So they're really, you just have to really look at that, at what you're doing and, you know, what's important to you in your life. And I used to do this wheel, and I still use it today, and it was 10 different areas of my life. What am I doing? How am I doing with my family? How am I doing with, you know, wherever your beliefs are? And it's, you know, how am I doing with my personal time? What am I doing for outreach? What am I doing in all these areas, in recreation and business finances and business planning and business succession? And how am I doing in all these areas? You know, am I spending time with friends and stuff? So I would look at that once a month and graph it and just be totally honest with myself and look at it. And then I would have to present this to another group of businessmen that we would meet once a month, and we would all present our it's called a wheel, and it's what's your wheel? You know, that's really an out of balance wheel. It's gonna be a pretty bumpy ride. But one thing they would always say is that, Mark, when we look at your wheel, your fun and recreation is always like a 9 or a 10. And I said, dude, I work very hard. We are gonna have fun. Yeah. I don't care what we're doing. I don't care where we go. We're gonna make it fun.
You told me a little bit about that. It was great hearing you talk about what you guys do from the lake house on the weekend. But I want to say, I'm reading this book called The One Thing. It was written in 2013. The Surprisingly Simple Truth Behind Extraordinary Results. A big chapter on work-life balance, and you hit it actually. The authors pretty much come down and say, it's work-life counterbalance, and it's not like a yin and a yang. It actually says that the work is more outside the bounds, and there's a couple of graphics in here that actually show how it works. And so amazing to see the treatment you just described, work-life balance. I'm currently reading a book, not about work-life balance, but it's one of the things to concentrate on, just one thing in your life.
Yeah, I think, you know, when we go back and you know, just kind of back up just a little bit, is that when I think about being able to take off work to go do something that, you know, my kid's playing a football game, 7th grade, the game's at 4 o'clock, you know, hour and a half away, you know, it's like, well, how many guys get to go take off? And I'm thinking, man, if I worked for an employer, hey, my kid's got a football game every Thursday or whatever. And I just really, I really, Carm, I was just so grateful that I was in a position and had the opportunity to do that. But I really felt like I never want one of my staff members, an employee, to not be able to take off. I don't think they have to be an owner to be able to take off. And so I always stress on people, hey, if your kids are doing something, you take off work, you be present. I don't care if it's 10 o'clock in the morning, they're in a play at school or whatever. You take off and go do it. Look, nobody's going to die. You're going to be gone for an hour, 2 hours, big deal. You make up for it however you know, you want to work, you know, maybe take a short.
Do they schedule for that so that you guys know?
Yes.
Yeah, good.
Yeah, and so, I mean, my manager that runs my store right now, you know, because I tell him, look, it's a season. It's just a season. Your kids aren't going to be around forever. You know, it's a season. Be there. Be present. And he takes off, and, you know, he lives in Texas. His son is in Virginia, and he's a big hockey player. And so they made the decision to let him move with an uncle and move there. My manager flies at least probably twice a month. He'll take off early and fly out there to go visit with us. That's why I'm at the conference today, is because he goes, you need to go be my proxy, because my son has a tournament. He says, if it was one game, it'd be one thing. I'm like, no, that is the right thing.
You mean I wouldn't have met you?
You wouldn't have met me. No,
I wouldn't have met you.
No.
Well, all right.
Funny how all these things work out.
So thank you for that. You know, something that my wife always told me, I think she grew up in the vein of your kids are loaned to you. You know, if you talk about a husband and wife relationship, you raise them, you do the best that you can, and then when they're off in their own world, in their own life, then it's you two, husband and wife, again.
We love it. We love it.
Look at the smile. And yeah, and that's the point. I mean, you never stop loving your kids. You never stop being engaged with them, but you do your job. And that the period in on the front side before kids, and the period after kids, and they're off and on their own till the day you retire, or, you know, you end this great world, is much bigger and longer than the period of raising the kids.
Yes.
So you're right.
When my daughter got married, everybody said, aren't you sad? Are you going to cry? And I'm like, nope, not at all. I said, I feel like we did our job. I think back to, I had a written family mission. It was kind of a hybrid mission statement of, hey, these are the things that we expect our children to learn and do. And then these are the things that our children can expect from me and your mother. And we would go through this. It was a document that my wife hated it when I first talked about doing it, because she goes, you're trying to make our family like a business.
Because you are a structured guy.
I said, no. Yeah. I said, there's things that you want for our children. You know, you have them. So they would be car talks. So when we would travel, we would have car talks. And I was like, well, what do you want? And then I would just catalog all the, and then I would write it out. So then I wrote this document out and said, this is what we expect. You know, and we had all kinds of things in there. And one of the things was about, you know, college. And I don't believe college is for everybody, or the traditional college. But I did say my children are going to have a college education. And I'm a big Texas A&M fan. So it was like, you're going to go to Texas A&M if you want dad to pay for it. That simple. You can go anywhere you want to go. You want me to pay for it, that's where you're going. But so my daughter was very compliant, and that's where she went. My son would do anything despite me, and knows I just don't like the University of Texas. And he would go there, and he was a football player. And I said, well, if Mac Brown wants to pay for your education, then you know what? I'll even buy the stuff for 4 years while you're there if he wants to pay for your education. Well, fortunately for him, somebody else decided that they would want to pay for his education for him to play for them. And so that's where he went. And it was great to have this document, because then we would, when we traveled, there was, you know, I would have to say, okay, give me the iPods, give me the Nintendo, give me everything. It's going here on the dash, and we're going to talk while we're driving. And it was, you know, I got the size, I got the, you know, I don't want to do that. And no, my, come on, dad. Nope. Then I'm just going to pull over, and we're going to stop until you cough it all up. You know, but dad, we're going to go on a cruise. You know, nope. And so we would talk, and we would say, how are we doing? And we would rate how we were doing to the plan. And my daughter, when she got married, she wrote me this letter that just talked about you. It was just so on spot. You taught me this, and it goes through all these things that she said I taught her. And she goes, but dad, when I look back at the vision for the family, she goes, I'm not sure I really could survive in the wilderness with no food or water. You know, because I wanted them to have survival skills. and I just put that in there. It was just something that I wanted. And she goes, I don't think I, you know, and she probably hit all of those things. But when we would come to those ratings and we would do my son, I felt bad because I felt, oh man, we're just beating this kid up. He's failing in all these areas.
But I love where you're going with this, but maybe your wife is right. Wow, talk about a structure. But you're a high conformity kind of guy. Yeah. Hey, you had told me that you love to listen to podcasts, and you listen to Dave Ramsey.
Andy yeah, Stanley, Dave Ramsey, Entree Leadership.
Am I in that list somewhere along the line?
You are in that list. Actually, right now, you are the number two. Okay?
Love it.
Dave
love
Ramsey hit Entree Leadership, okay, which Dave Ramsey's rarely ever on that podcast, but just an incredible amount of information, especially for a small business owner.
So recommend everyone to read Entree Leadership.
Yes, you should read Entree Leadership. Or listen to the podcast. You're driving, you're in the shop, you're whatever, listen to it. And the other guy who's a very motivational guy, and really, he's really for the real estate industry, and I know I mentioned him to you yesterday, is Brian Buffini. Great. You know, the thing about it, Carm, there's so much access to great, great content. I only started listening to yours probably 3 months ago from my manager said, hey, I listened to this and I think we should do this. And I'm like, what are you listening to? And he'd tell me, and I said, oh, I got to listen to that. And so I go on these binge listening, you know, where I'm driving to a meeting somewhere or whatever. And I,
on the ride over, I'm telling Mark, go back and listen to some episodes that he would really enjoy. So what brings you to the Auto Vitals digital shop thing here? Now, I understand you're here for your shop manager, but what are you taking away?
Oh, my God. There's such a wealth of knowledge in the room just from other owners. You know, I absolutely love what Auto Vitals is doing for the industry. And it's really changing how we look at our work and really forcing us to get best practices, do better, really SOPs.
Yeah, that's what hit me the other day was I was listening to the roundtable, and many of the guys that are so deep in it, they are they're process people. And when you get a process person and you got a process platform here, one of the guys says there isn't anything we won't do in our shop that we don't have a process for, that it becomes an inspection sheet.
Yes.
Wow, impressed with that. So that everything, if we were going to do a voltage drop, it's done the same way, the right way for everyone in the shop. In fact, they even have a video in case someone doesn't do it for, you know, a month or two at a time. A new person gets on there and they know exactly how it should be done. I was...
Yes.
And that... When I think of the word paperless, you know, is your shop paperless? People are thinking that, you know, invoices go away, but I believe it means so much more.
Yes. We're not paperless because we still buy paper towels and toilet paper.
Bingo. So, but, please don't.
But it is, because when I think back, even in my collision business, is that, gosh, we need a SOP. Oh, I don't have time to do that. We need a SOP. I know we need to do that. But one of the things I did, I always had task lists. Okay, because you know I'm a high C, you know, a high C, and so I'm not a high D, and that's what people say. That's really interesting. You're not a high D because you're a business owner. I'm like, no, I'm not. My manager is a high D. Well, what I've learned through all this, and John's really an anomaly, is because he's a high D, high C, which that's really, you just don't come across that. So he's really a process guy, but he's driven.
Well, yeah, and demanding so, and driven, yeah. And a process guy. Well, you know, I don't think you can get a better guy.
No, because I, you know, I'm a numbers guy, and I'm going to go and I'm going to analyze. I want to plan. I want to plan.
That's called analysis paralysis.
It is. It is. And it also will make you not make decisions, because you don't have enough data.
But the ying is your guy, John, who's going to make the decision for you.
No.
No?
We're going to make the decision together.
Got
you know,
well, okay.
That's a great thing, is we can do something. Mm-hmm. And John is smart enough, and we have such a good enough relationship that he can, you know, he can tell me I'm an idiot, whatever. It's not going to hurt my feelings. It's like, well, why do you think that? You know, and then he'll tell me why. But I can give him something. We may have these, you know, big spreadsheets or something. He goes, oh, you might want to look at that formula. I'm not sure that's right. And then once we agree on it, well, John's a guy that's going to go out there and get it done. He's going to go get it done because that's his personality style. The challenge with John was he's not a people person. What you got to have people to get your plan done. And anybody can be a high D and a driver and stuff over the short term.
Where's his influence? Does he have any extroversion at all?
No.
Oh.
But he knows that now. And so he knows that. So when I coach him, it was always in that aspect. But I don't mean this to offend anybody. He was an East Coast guy.
Hey, what do you mean? Hey, stop.
Yeah, he's an East Coast guy. It's just everything was black and white for him. Yeah. It's black and white. I'm like, no, John, there's gray. No, it's black. It's either this or that. No, well, you know, there's some gray. And what's interesting now is because he has a lot more responsibilities, you know, on day-to-day basis and running the business and stuff. And he says, well, here's what I've learned. You know, I'll just say he can be a real butthole in nice words. He would tell you it's different, and that was the difference between us. I'm the really nice guy, and he's the guy that's not the really nice guy. But, you know, he'll say, he goes, here's what I've learned. He goes, there's gray. There's a lot of gray, Mark. There's nothing's black or white anymore.
You helped him see the light. It's called gray.
Yeah, it's gray.
And you're doing a succession plan with him and one of your other people.
Yes.
Wow. Great opportunity for these guys.
Yeah, when I worked for this gentleman, wonderful guy, learned a lot from this guy in running the business, and he was very quiet. He never, you know, sat down and actually mentored me. I just learned by watching how he operated and stuff. Fantastic, fantastic guy. But the one thing he told me is that you'll never own part of this business. My children will never own part of this business. You know, because my friends have had businesses and their children have screwed up their business or screwed them in business. And in the back of my mind, I was just thinking, gosh, I just want to own. I want to be an owner because I think there's a certain psychological thing about saying I'm an owner, you know, and for me, it's not about ego. I think it's psychological. Yeah, I'm proud because I'm part of this. And I always felt like, gosh, if I would have just owned 5%, I would have paid for it. Then I'm an owner. Most people thought I was an owner. I treated it like it was mine. I just worked hard, you know, whatever we needed done. Cause I knew, hey, if we got cars coming in, I'm going to have a paycheck. Guy took very good care of me, but I just felt like, you know, I don't want someone that's worked for me for years and just been a dedicated person to have to go out and become my, you know, become a competitor or just have to go out. And because I know the struggles I went through starting my business and stuff is that I want to see them grow. I want to see them excel. I want to see them do great things. And then I want to see them pass that on. So I felt like I'm going to allow them. And people told me I was crazy. I was stupid. And you shouldn't do that. You can get screwed. I can get screwed all kinds of ways, you know? And so I said, but those guys are dedicated guys. Those guys are the ones that have been, you know what? Those guys are the ones that have been building that business the last couple of years. And so we built a brand new shop and we actually separated our collision division from our mechanical division and just created another company, operating company. And so when we did that, I said, you know, each of you guys, I said, in my mind, I'm thinking I'd like three people in the shop. I want a manager. I want a lead tech and maybe a service advisor to have, you know, 10%, you know, maybe somebody owns 20, the manager owns 20, lead tech owns 10 and a servicer rider owns 10% of the business. And so we created this buy-in basically that they could do. It's kind of structured over 10 years, you know, I've told them, hey, so I'll probably speed up the plan, you know, at 5. I just want to see you be successful and I want to see you grow. And, you know, I have a number of interests, that I do and it's, I'm having fun.
You are a busy guy. I mean, he was just telling me all the things that you're in construction. You're on a board of utility. Whoa.
Yeah. I'm on the board for a large utility, and we have a couple subsidiaries. So we're involved in internet. We're involved in fiber to the home.
Yeah, you were telling me about all that stuff, and I actually lost track of all the things you were doing. But it almost makes sense from the automotive and collision perspective to give up a little because you're not spending the kind of time there. But you know the business is in good hands if you give them a piece of it.
The truth be told is that he's a better manager on day-to-day than I am. I'm a hunter, gatherer. I want to go get it started. Like, we're working on building another shop. And so I tell these guys, what am I doing that I shouldn't be doing? What am I not doing that I should be doing? What do you think I should be working on? You know, and I literally, I literally got me a little, because I've always been in the shop. When I built my new shop, I didn't build an office in it. And I literally got a little bitty desk to put in our break room just so I could put a laptop on and stuff. And I went in there to put it together, you know, it's cheap little thing, just something to have a little platform. And I was carrying the boxes out to the trash, and I'm coming back up to the office, and the manager and the lead tech got that desk lifted up, and they're carrying it outside. And I'm like, what are you doing? They said, hey, you didn't build an office here for a reason. You don't need a desk here. You don't need to be here.
You out.
Yeah, that's pretty much what they said. We got a good kick out. That's pretty much what they said. So, you know, things were, you know, and I've had some associates say, you know, it's just not the same because you're not here. You know, and I know that's kind of a transition thing, because literally I go by there twice a week. You know, I kind of have make my rounds, but if they need something, we're on chat. If they need something, they call me. I look at KPIs every day. I look at, you know, the great thing about AutoVitals is I absolutely love it, because I log in at home. I have it running on a screen. I know where every car is in that shop.
Yeah, you can see it. So tell me, how hard was it to implement the system?
From my perspective, is actually pretty easy, Carm, because I tasked John with that. I went and visited a shop that was running it 4 years ago when it was kind of in the infancy, and I went and I'm looking at this technology, and I'm thinking, wow, Bill Connor was so gracious. And anytime I'm traveling, I visit shops. You know, if I drive by a shop and I see, wow, that's a really good looking facility, I want to go, but I'll call. You know, I'll drive, I'll make a note, I'll go look it up on the internet, and I'll call and to see if I can get a hold of an owner. I'll let them know I'm an owner. Sometimes I'll walk in, I'll give them a business card and say, hey, I'm a shop owner in Texas and saw your facility, I like real good. You know, look, I know you're probably busy. You know, can I get a nickel tour, just a 5-minute tour? And you know, and if I see something, I ask, hey, can I take a picture of that? Do you mind if I take a picture? Because that really looks like a best practice or something. And I've never been denied a shop. Now, I have been in a shop where a guy, you know, and I'm thinking, gosh, they got this beautiful shop, but their customer service is horrible. Got a guy hiding behind a counter, you can barely see his eyes. And I say, hey, you got time? And he just kind of looks at me and he nods his head and says, yep, just go on back there, you know. And I'm like, okay. There was just so much crap everywhere, and I'm like, oh my goodness.
Business culture today is like huge, and anyone who could take that leap into becoming a great leader and implementing the right culture and the behaviors and the values in the business, you could walk into a place. You could walk in and recognize the unbelievable culture that places have and some of them that don't.
Right.
And that person who walks in, quote-unquote the customer, is affected. Yes. By that energy, lack thereof.
Yes, lack thereof.
So big culture, good culture going on at your place?
I'm probably biased.
Okay.
But yes, we have an exceptional crew. It is so neat that, you know, it's kind of hard to explain, I guess, that we get so many compliments across so many platforms. And there's probably not anywhere at any point in time that I can go somewhere in our city. And we're not a super big, we're probably 40,000 in our city, but we're next to another city that's another 30,000. We're right on the outskirts of San Antonio. And it is very rare that I go anywhere that I don't have somebody come up to me and tell me what a great job that someone did at my shop or that they did. And it used to be, and this is what's really bad. It used to be when someone would come up to me and say, hey, I had my car in the shop the other day, and I'm thinking, oh crap, what did we do wrong? What did we mess up? That is rarely ever.
But why?
But I think it's
why
easy to focus
that?
On that. Because, you know, and you have 100 customers and you have 99 just raving, and then you have one and you let that one.
You're always preparing for bad news then.
That's right. But I don't do that anymore.
Okay.
Because it doesn't happen. And you know what? We're not perfect. Yeah, we do. And it's like, oh, you know what? Hey, we need to take care of it. Let me find out more detail. But I will tell you, every time a friend will come up and say, hey, this person, you really need to take, my friend did this. And I'm like, oh, well, let me look into it. And I never respond. Let me look into it. And I just send an email to the shop and say, hey, you need to look in this. Give me the details. the record keeping is just incredible of everything they told the customer. And so I'll respond.
See, now you're talking the DVI stuff.
Yes.
Because it is so succinct, so detailed. So, you know, if the text notes are novelish and the pictures are right and the recommendations are there, you have such a great platform to stand on when you're looking to back into finding if you have a gap in a process.
Yeah. Oh, your shop said it was $800 to put two tires on there. And, you know, and I know that that's not true. Well, that doesn't sound right. Let me go back and look into it. And I just sent an email to Jones. Hey, can you look at this? And he'll give me all the details. Oh, no, this is what was all included in that. You know, and you got, you know, a flush and they had a leaking hose and they had this and, you know, and it's just, and so then when you provide that level of feedback to that person that's, you know, letting you know of this, you know, how we're ripping off this person, they're like, oh, wow, those are good records. No, that's not even, you know what? I'm going to call my friend. That wasn't right what they posted. I'm going to call my friend. You know, and so the level of detail that you're able to do.
There's an investment of time, new disciplines, but yet I think the benefits far outweigh the investment. The investment, of course, to buy it. But, you know, I've heard some stories of losing some people internally in trying to implement.
Yes, because it is different. You are asking your technicians to, they're not really doing anything more than we haven't done before. It's just probably more efficient, but it's a different way of doing it. And, but I think it goes back to you, and I know sometimes our techs may get frustrated with it because of some of the, maybe it could be a change or maybe something's not working. I think ultimately it makes everybody so much more efficient, but it's because you got to explain the why to the techs, and that, you know, this is why we're doing this. You know why your bay is always full? Because we're able to do this stuff and we're able to make these recommendations to our customers. We're able to tell the story to our customer, which keeps us bringing us more customers or the same customer for these services. And you're assisting in that. That's all part of our marketing efforts today. You know, marketing isn't, you know, buying a Yellow Page ad anymore. It's, you know, you're looking at you're looking across these many platforms on a daily basis to see what people are saying about you. But you know, it's, we've taken some of that stuff from the front, we've shifted it to the back, you know, but ultimately it's making the techs better. And, you know, we're, I don't want to say we're different from everybody, but we're probably not the norm because we don't pay on flat rate. Our techs are hourly. We pay based upon efficiencies, but we pay based upon technician team efficiencies. Now, you know, we're small enough, you know, we have six techs, we're small enough to do that. So those guys work together. They see somebody struggling on something, they're going to go help them out because they say, hey, we want him to be efficient because we want our efficiency to be up. So let's go help him. Let's go understand him.
You can build an incredible mentoring and an apprentice program in an environment where they're teaming together.
Yeah. But don't get me wrong, we expect them to be efficient.
Yeah.
You know?
So you're tracking their production, tracking their efficiencies.
Yes.
Okay. And do they see it daily, weekly?
They do. They can get the number daily if they want. I mean, obviously through AutoVitals now, they can see that number. They can look at that number very easy because it's on their tablets.
It's theirs.
Right? It's there. We bi-weekly pay, then that's when we look at it. But we look at it because we want them to be efficient and we want the service riders to be. So if the tech gets a efficiency bonus, the techs do, the service rider gets it too. So the service riders are monitoring it also.
And that's where that relationship and communication comes in. The service rider needs to sell the recommended services. And
correct.
If they trust the information, and the information is whole that's coming from the tech, it's easier to do. And it's not, you know, there's no initials. Talking to a bunch of guys here that said it's become very easy for many of our service advisors to be so confident. It's the confidence level that we've done this great inspection. We've got the proper information. We know the SOPs have been done right. So in order to sell the job to the customer almost looks and hears or sees a confidence level that this is what's wrong and this is what it's going to take to get the job done.
It takes a team. It's a team effort. And, you know, it does take work. It did take a while to implement. And, but, you know, it's a living, you know, I'll just say it's like a living document is that, yeah, we are making changes. How do we make it more efficient? You know, and coming to something like this conference, it's like, hey, well, I need to look at that. Are we doing that? Because I'm not involved in all the day-to-day operations, you know, like I don't see everything the tech sees, but I'm process. You know, I'm looking, well, what notes are they typing in all the time? Why are they typing that in all the time? If that's something that's consistently they're having to, and they don't type it, they'll do text to speech. But if that's something that's consistent, why haven't we made that a drop down, a selection?
Bingo.
And
wow.
So
yeah. And you're learning from all
that. You learn from it. And it's like, well, how do we make our, you know, in listening to what some of the other guys are doing, I'm like, oh, hey, we probably need to step up in that area. We probably need, I need to look into that to see, you know, how are we doing in that area? What are we doing? And so, you know, I've got a list of questions for when I get back for my manager. And he told me take very good notes. So I'm just doing what I'm told.
Last book you read?
You know, I read five at a time normally. We talked about it last night, is the Navy SEAL Extreme Ownership.
Great book.
Oh, man, yeah,
great book.
Incredible.
Yeah.
Incredible book. Just it's if you're a guy and you just kind of like all these things, you know, the way that book is laid out is just it. And I actually heard about that book initially on Entree Leadership. Entree Leadership is really kind of my thing that makes it's like, oh, that guy was an incredible speaker. He had some great content. I need to go read the book. So my process now is I will typically just buy the audio book and listen to it. And then, you know, I'm like, wow, that was really good. And I'll make some mental notes or pencil notes. Sometimes I'll listen to it again. And sometimes I say, I just need to go get the book now. I need to do highlights and create my book report for me.
You rely on your intuition?
Yes. But I got to have data. I got to have data.
Verify, right?
I got to verify.
Research.
It's like we did the best plan. You know, and, you know, this is something I learned through my board position and, you know, that, you know, we're looking back where we had to make decisions and the electricity utility market, you're looking 30 years out, you know, so you're looking at 5-year plans, 10-year plans, you know, you're always looking out and the way electricity is bought and sold in the U.S. is just very interesting. And so you have tons of planning. We do lots of strategic planning and, you know, there's decisions we made, you know, 3 years ago, maybe 4 years ago, or even 5 years ago, based upon the consultants, based upon the information we're getting, we made the absolute right best decision at the time with the information that was available.
And that's why you have to renew. I mean, you could create a 5-year plan, but you got to renew it maybe every 3.
Yeah. We do a very detailed budget every year and we look out, you know, it's very detailed for the year. You know, you want to know what we're going to spend for paper towels next year. I can tell you what we're going to spend for paper towels, what we're going to spend for lawn service, what we're going to spend for paper, you know, just if for printing an invoice or something, or what we're going to spend for toners. You know, we go through where are we spending our advertising dollars? Where do we have that budgeted? And we look at that. We live by it.
What are you spending on advertising? What percent?
Really only about 3.5%. You know, and that seems like when I look at what people are spending, you know, some spend 5%. You know, we're about 3.5%. And, you know, we're going to look at that some more.
Are you growing?
Oh, yes.
Stores growing?
Yeah. We've probably had, gosh, when I just think about the my collision business grew. I mean, we grew. It was nothing. I mean, it was 15% year over year every year. Sometimes it's 20%, 30%. Our collision business, I can't even, it's probably last year was probably about 18%. This year we kind of scaled it back a little bit. Yeah, we just really felt like that, hey, we are in this new facility. We're really, we can do more. We just figured 15% year over year over our original plan. Because we killed our plan for last year. And it's like, just let's be reasonable, though. Because it was always, you know, my expectation was 15% year over year. But, you know, as you grow, that that gets a little bit more difficult to get that 15% target.
Well, yeah, but you're also going to have guys are going to work harder because they have an ownership stake.
Yeah.
Yeah.
They do.
Wow. Any final great quote words to live by? Any wisdom you'd love to share?
Well, I don't know if it's really wisdom. And this was another something that I heard. You know, we've talked about what we do for philanthropy. I've never been able to I've never even been able to say that word.
It's a tough word
like,
to say.
It's kind of like Massachusetts. Yeah. I can never say that word. When we talk about that and people always say, well, you know, I'm giving back. And I heard this from Rabbi Daniel Lapine, who was a speaker on Entree Leadership, and I bought his book and read it. And it just something that just really stuck out because I love to give. I absolutely love to give. I mean, I have a charitable trust set up that a mentor helped me and taught me how to fund it and to be able to give through that trust. And so we get to support a number of different things. And, you know, I always said that, you know, the problem with me in business is I'd give it all away. You know, I don't need a lot, you know, and, I'm not destitute. We just, you know, my kids are spoiled. We gave them way too much and this, they recognize it and stuff. And so, you know, they would get mad because it's like, I won't buy them a new cell phone, but I'll give, you know, I'll make a substantial contribution to something and, you know, and they know about it, you know, or some program or happen and they'll say, we had this donor and they're like, Dad, that sounds like something you did. Did you do that? And I don't tell them everything, but I heard this, you know, when you say, well, I'm giving back, it's when you think about it, it can be a negative connotation, is that you charged too much and now you feel guilty. So you're giving some back, you know, or you took too much. And so now you're giving back. So what he always says is you're choosing to invest in the community or you're choosing to invest in a program because ultimately that's what it is. It's our choice. We get to choose what we're going to support. And it's not about giving back. It's about investing. It's about investing in people, investing in the lives of others, investing in your community, investing in a global mission or something like that. And so it's, you know, why are we in business? It's a tool. It's a tool to reach others and to grow and see others excel.
Mark Roberts, Schertz Auto Service in Schertz, Texas. Thank you. Thank you so much, man.
Thank you, man. I appreciate you having me on the podcast. And man, I am so grateful that I got to meet you, that we ended up being bunked in the same, you know, the same house. And it's like, I'm a fan of yours. You know, I absolutely love what you're doing, you know, and you do an incredible job.
It wouldn't be a credible job if it wasn't for guys like you coming on and just sharing their world. Thank you, man.
Thanks.
Thank you, Mark Roberts. A great story to be continued. I love your outlook on the power and strength of your family focus at your business. Continued success in all of your endeavors. Hey, for a list of the episode's talking points, Mark's bio information, and the shop profile, see the show notes at remarkableresults.biz/E298. Hey, don't forget, check out the Town Hall Academy Single Subject Roundtable Series. Find this very powerful aftermarket resource at remarkableresults.biz/academy. Your learning curve never sounded so good. Now, if you need to get in touch, you know you can. Email me at carm@remarkableresults.biz. Now, go and share this episode with someone who can value this story. You must know someone who can relate to Mark's story. Hey, talk soon.
Thanks for being on board to listen and learn from the premier automotive aftermarket podcast. Until next time.